This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
School of Humans.
Have you guys done your taxes yet? Yeah, me neither. I mean, if you have, that's great of you. Very responsible, 10 out of 10. You win the award for today. But I do stand-up comedy, so sometimes you'll get like a W-2 for some place that you did a show at where you got like $15. And I'm like, can we just not report this? I think it's fine. It's just 15. But do you guys know who was really annoyed about taxes, like even more than we are? The American colonists before the American Revolution. They were pissed. They were pissed about those taxes. Stamps, tea. They're like, is nothing sacred? In the mid-18th century, revolution was rumbling in the streets. People were whispering, or even sometimes talking quite loudly, about liberty and independence from Britain. Because they didn't want to pay those gosh dang taxes. I mean, other reasons too, but mostly the taxes, it seems. The Stamp Act lasted less than a year due to boycotts and protests, but the Brits kept at it. They were like, we'll create more taxes. Maybe they won't notice. Well, they did. And some of them decided to do something more about it. Something dramatic. They're like, yeah, we can protest, we can boycott, but let's do something a bit crazier. Why don't we take these loyalists, or these people trying to enforce the taxes, or also the importers and exporters who aren't boycotting, what if we cover them in tar and then roll them in feathers? Obviously, that's the solution. Appropriately, this is called tar and feathering, and it's been happening since the medieval period in Europe. And then it got exported to the Americas and became très popular during the revolutionary period. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of it today and learn about this sticky and feathery torture and its many victims. Cue the theme song! This is American Filth. I'm Gabby Watts. Every week I tell you a filthy story from American history. This week, tar and feather. I know, not very creative, but I'm tired. So tar and feathering really caught on in the Americas in the mid-18th century. The Sons of Liberty were super into it. That was a band of dudes that was formed to fight for the rights of the colonists, intimidate any person trying to enforce British taxation, sometimes with violence, and then eventually they would fight for American independence. You know, they were the ones who were like, no taxation without representation. And they were the ones who made tar and feathering iconic. Starting in the late 1760s, a slew of tar and featherings occurred throughout the colonies, from Virginia up to New England. Historians think that American colonists learned about the practice from sailors. Like in 1766 in Virginia, a ship captain got tarred and feathered because he told royal officials that contraband was on board another ship. But then that captain was attacked by the owner of the ship he tattled on. The owner and some of his cronies smeared tar all over him, doused him in feathers, and then paraded him through the streets of the town. Finally, once their revelry was completed, they dumped the captain in the harbor. I would imagine at this point, while flailing in the water, he regretted his choice. After all, the royal officials were doing nothing to save him. And also, while he was paraded through the streets, apparently even the mayor was there, LOLing at the captain, like everyone else. The captain almost drowned, but before he sank, a passing boat rescued him. He probably resembled one of those pelicans covered in gas from an oil spill, but unfortunately at the time, they did not yet have Dawn dish soap. While dumping the captain into the harbor was a unique garnish for that particular case, this was how most tar and featherings would go. And if any of you are in need of a historical torture method for your enemies, here is what you need to tar and feather someone. First, it's hard to tar and feather someone by yourself. You know, most people won't sit still and let you tar them up, so it's good to have some cronies with you. Or even better, a whole mob. Mobs love to tar and feather. Indeed, tar and feathering is actually a great community-building exercise and creates bonds that will last a lifetime. Then, obviously, you need to get some tar, and most of the tar that was used was pine tar, which you could find almost everywhere in the colonies. It was used on ships to protect the ropes and used for axles and machinery. Tar was also used to cauterize and sterilize wounds somehow. And then sometimes you could use it in your hair if you're trying to do a nice stiff updo. Okay, so now you got your tar. Now it's time to put it all over your victim. Here you got some options. You could tar them up while they're still in their clothes. That would actually be the nicer way to do it. It's like, yeah, you're ruining that outfit, but it will be a lot easier for them to get all of the tar off later. Alternatively, you could strip them out of all of their clothes and you could just dunk them in a tar barrel. Now it appears most of the time, the tar that was used had been cooled down. It wasn't fresh, hot tar. But there were a couple unhappy cases where people were actually tarred with warm tar. And that's bad. It would blister your skin, just burn you up. So luckily, they usually had the humanity to use cool tar. Okay, and now once you got the tar on them, you gotta find some feathers. Feathers were also pretty common. You know, they stuffed mattresses and pillows. And if you wanted to find the right quantity, usually you just needed a couple pillows of down to cover your victim from head to toe and become the ugliest bird you've ever seen. There are plenty of cases, though, where people would rip open a mattress and then just throw their victim into the feathers. Now, once you have your victim covered in tar, covered in feathers, it's time to show off the great work you have done. You and your mob of friends parade the victim around the town, being like, look at this loyalist fool, mwahahaha. And for them, a lot of the pain from this experience came from the humiliation of being in this parade. Sometimes crowds would gather in the thousands to see a feathered man, and they would last for hours, while people were cheering and hurling insults at you. Wow, what a fun time. Sometimes they'd even make the victim make a speech to renounce his loyalist ways and embrace the fervor of liberty. And when it came to physical pain, in some cases, the process was quite violent. Like there was one case where a dude was forced to pluck the feathers off of a live goose. And then after he was tar and feathered, they kept throwing the goose at him. In some other cases, once a man was covered in feathers, They lit them on fire, burning his skin underneath. Owie. Also, it was just really hard to get the tar off. Like, you'd have to scrub and scrub and scrub and maybe use turpentine to help dissolve it. And almost every single victim of this, they had a lot of hair loss. And sometimes they would get this thing called tar acne, which I can only imagine is fucking terrible acne. A lot of these events happened in Boston and in the surrounding New England area. But it wasn't just the Sons of Liberty who engaged in it. In fact, it caught on all across the colonies. Everyday people on the side of independence from Britain might partake in some recreational torture if someone started being too loyalist around them. Also, some of these colloquial tar and featherings kind of demonstrate the creativity and DIY spirit that many folks had at the time. Like, there was one that happened in Kinderhook, New York. There was a group of women just sitting around quilting, just girly things. And then this guy came up to them who was a loyalist, and he started complaining about the Continental Congress. He was like, "Gah, why on earth would you want to advocate for your independence? That's so stupid. Boo, the Congress." The women who were quilting were probably looking at this dude like, "Why are you loyalist explaining to us right now? We will not do emotional labor for you, random man." Also, quilting is a serious and tedious process not to be interrupted, so I don't know why he was just talking at them. So while the dude was spewing his loyalist garbage, the women suddenly stopped their quilting and were probably like, "Shut up, you little British cuck bitch." They grabbed him, pinned him down, stripped him down to the waist, girl boss, girl power, etc. But the thing is, these women, they did not have any tar on hand. They were probably like, "Hellfire and damnation, the one time I didn't bring tar with me, we need to tar a son of a female dog." But luckily, the quilt squad had a bunch of molasses. You know, that's what you eat with the girlies when you're quilting. You know, before the invention of sips and strokes, where you drink wine and paint a horrendous picture of a flower with your gal pals, they had quilt and molasses parties, probably called Sticky and So. I'm just kidding, that was a stupid joke. I should delete it, but I'm not going to. Haha. So with the spirit of DIY or die, they took the molasses and poured it all over the loyalist dude. And then, as they had no feathers on hand, what they did instead is they just rolled him around in the meadow, collecting the debris of wildflowers. And they were like, "Yeah, that's what you get, scum." Now, I want to be clear, it wasn't like everyone was getting tar and feathered. Historians have found that there were probably like a dozen or so, maybe two dozen, that have actually been written down and recorded. There's probably some other ones, but it kind of happened in different phases. Like, it seems that they started after the Stamp Act was repealed, and then when the British enacted the Townshend Act, which taxed glass, lead, paint, paper, and tea. And as an act of protest, they were like, "We're going to tar and feather." But then it seems like the Sons of Liberty kind of changed their methods. Instead of tar and feathering people who were importing British goods or trying to enforce taxes, they started tar and feathering the goods themselves, you know, property. And in one case, someone's horse. Why they decided to do this, IDK. But it seems that from like 1770 to 1772, there were only a couple of cases where people got tar and feathered. Also, at this point, the Townshend Act had been repealed. So the Liberty Boys, the Whigs, the Patriots, they seemed to be losing steam and motivation. But luckily for their resolve, in 1773, that's when the Tea Act was passed. Wasn't that compelling information about taxes? Whatever. But we all know about the Tea Act. Blah, 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 blah. There's the Boston Tea Party. And then the patriot passion was ignited once again. After the Boston Tea Party, that's when one British official got a particularly violent tar and feathering in Boston. His name was John Malcolm. He was despised by the Sons of Liberty and independence supporters because he was a big, fat loyalist. That's right, he worked in customs and he loved his job. If people weren't paying their taxes, if people weren't paying their duties, John Malcolm was gonna come for them. Now, a mob came after him after this one particular event that really didn't have anything to do with taxes, but he was just being an asshole. And they're like, that's enough of an excuse for us. So Malcolm had been walking around Boston when suddenly a young boy riding in a sled ran into him. Now, Malcolm, it seems he probably had a reputation where he wouldn't take it too well if someone ran into him with a sled. So a shoemaker named George Hughes saw the incident and he came to the defense of the boy, which then resulted in Malcolm beating the shit out of George. What a nice guy. And so the Liberty Boys were like, that's all we need. We gotta tar and feather this asshole. And for Malcolm, while he's not the most sympathetic person, this was really quite unfortunate for him because he is probably one in a small handful of people who have been through this twice. 2 months earlier, he had been in New Hampshire and got tar and feathered. But this tar and feathering that was about to happen in Boston was about to be a whole heck of a lot worse. Once word of the assault got around, a mob descended upon Malcolm, and they tore his clothes off, beat him up, gave him the tar and feathering treatment, and then paraded him through the town. Stopping at various patriot attractions like the Liberty Tree, and at each stop, they would flog him. And you know, because they were still pissed off about the tea, they forced him to drink so much tea that he vomited. And yeah, through this experience, he almost died. Whoops. And how did our revered founding fathers and patriot leaders feel about this? You know, for a lot of these, the worst thing that happened was the humiliation of being torn around the streets and then, you know, getting the tar off of your skin. But as we've learned, sometimes they were extremely brutal. Well, it seems that some of the patriot leaders were like really into it. Like, apparently, John Hancock paid the legal fees of one man who was arrested as a tar and featherer. But this last one with John Malcolm, they're like, hey guys, I think you went a bit too far with this one. We should probably calm it down. They're like, no one's going to be sympathetic to our cause if we are literally being a crazy mob. And then also, how did the British feel about this? Not great. In March 1775, a group of British soldiers were outside of Boston. They were being harassed, they were annoyed, they were fed up. So what they did is they set up this guy named Thomas Ditson. And Thomas wasn't the brightest bulb on the tree. So one of the officers offered to sell him a gun, which was illegal. And Thomas was like, hell yes, brother, I'll buy that gun from you. But then they arrested him. And the commanding sergeant of these soldiers was like, damn you, I am going to serve you as you have served our men. And then commanded the soldiers to tar and feather this random dude. Then they put a sign on him that said, American Liberty, a specimen of democracy. And then they paraded him around the town while playing Yankee Doodle out of spite. Of course, at this, the colonists were like, oh my God, how dare you? It's like, I know we were doing that, but how could you, technically the governing body, do something as wicked as that? But you know, they didn't really resolve anything because whoops, war is on the horizon. And tar and feathering wasn't happening just in the north. Oh no. It was making its way down south. And there, one brutal tar and feathering left another man near death. But that man survived and vowed to get his revenge. Be right back after these soothing advertisements. All right, let's talk about the Continental Congress real fast. So in 1775, they came up with this policy. They were like, hey, don't import, don't export British goods. And then they called on these local committees across the colonies to form so that they could enforce this plan. And the Continental Congress came up with the Articles of Association, where they would force colonists to publicly declare if they were for or against American liberty. And if they refused to sign these articles, well, the Continental Congress was like, local committees, you can make a public example out of them. That's fine. And what's a great way to make a public example out of someone? Tar and feather them, obviously. And so tar and feathering was making its way down south, and it was about to be used upon a dude named Thomas Brown. who would later be called Burnfoot. You'll see why. Anyway, Thomas Brown was born in the north of England in 1750, and his dad was a prosperous merchant and manufacturer. When he turned 24, it was Thomas's turn to go out in the world and make his fortune. He got a boat and enlisted 70 indentured servants from Scotland to go on the long voyage to Georgia to work on a plantation. How fun. The boat arrived in Georgia in November 1774, and with 3,000 pounds of his family's money, he established Brownsboro. Remember, his name was Thomas Brown. So, Brownsboro. Honestly, I think it would have had a better ring to it if it was called Browntown, but that's just me. Also, I guess that does sound gross. Anyway, Brownsboro was near Augusta, and Thomas had a 5,600-acre plantation. And when he arrived, the royal governor of Georgia made Thomas a magistrate of the area. Wow. And according to historians, it does appear that Thomas fully intended to lead a peaceful life as a planter. Ah, yes, isn't it peaceful to have 70 indentured servants? Ah, the definition of tranquility. But unfortunately for him, he arrived at a bad time. The revolution was nigh. The Continental Congress was convening. They were making people say yay or nay to American liberty. The Georgia Provincial Congress voted to enforce the no import and export rule, as the Continental Congress decreed. Thomas Brown, though, he wasn't into independence. He wasn't into any of it. He had hardly been away for a year. He was a magistrate. He had indentured servants and a rich dad. Why would he ever be on the side of this silly American cause? His life is awesome. Thomas ended up joining a loyalist group that opposed the Provincial Congress. But alas, I guess he was doxxed or something, or it was just well known who he was associated with. Because on August 2nd, 1775, more than 100 men who were part of the Sons of Liberty arrived at his plantation. They're like, hello, loyalist scum. You must sign these articles of association. But Thomas, he refused to pledge allegiance to the not yet created American flag and stated that he was against independence. So this horde of Liberty boys took it upon themselves to try to convince him otherwise. First, what they did is they beat him up. Someone had a rifle and they started hitting him with it. Then they tore off his clothes and tied him to a tree. And once he was tied to the tree, they set his feet on fire. There we go. There's the burn foot. And then it gets worse. They scalped him. That's right. They cut the scalp right off. And finally, they painted him with tar and covered him in feathers. Now, some accounts say that they tarred and feathered him and then lit him on fire, but others, you know, say the opposite. But either way, he wasn't feeling good. Thomas was obviously in bad shape after this happened. He ended up losing two toes from the burns, and from being beaten with the rifle, his skull was fractured. For the rest of his life, he had headaches, and he became addicted to laudanum, probably from trying to get a break from his chronic pain. But instead of forcing Thomas into submission, the Sons of Liberty accidentally made a great enemy. Because even though Thomas Brown had been beaten down in the muck, he was now pissed as frick. No longer was he under the delusion that he would be a peaceful, happy planter. Oh no, instead he doubled down and became a Tory loyalist extraordinaire, ready to fight these patriot jackasses. He said that even though the Patriots had, quote, presented him with a genteel and fashionable suit of tar and feathers, end quote, he was undaunted by the task to shut them down. In the couple months after the attack, Thomas Brown recovered and he began supporting the Loyalist effort in South Carolina. But then, unfortunately for him, he was overrun. So Thomas had to flee. And where were the Loyalists fleeing to at this moment? Well, they were going to East Florida. You know, Florida, a safe place where nothing bad has ever happened. When Thomas got to East Florida, he formed his own militia called the East Florida Rangers. Pew, 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 pew. He and his men raided Georgia, defended East Florida, and eventually helped the British get Georgia back from the Patriots. After they disbanded, Thomas formed a new militia called the King's Rangers, and he continued to fight and fight and fight and fight to get vengeance for his missing toes and his headaches. Finally, in 1781, Thomas and his militia had to surrender. And at this point, I don't know if Thomas had fully quenched his thirst for revenge. You know, it's like, how many patriots do you have to kill in order to get over being tar and feathered? I don't know. Meanwhile, tar and feathering was falling out of fashion. People were like, are we bad for doing this? I mean, it's the Age of Enlightenment after all. Maybe we shouldn't behave like animals. In 1777, Thomas Paine wrote about tar and feathering. He wrote, quote, "It is time to be done with tarring, feathering, carding, and taking securities for their future behavior. Every sensible man must feel a conscious shame at seeing a poor fellow hawked for a show about the streets." And after the war, there was still some tarring and feathering. Like some of the loyalists who went back to their homes after the war, some of them got tarred and feathered, you know, just on principle, I guess. But there are fewer instances than there used to be. And throughout American history, there have been other instances of tarring and feathering. And eventually the practice, you know, did get picked up by white supremacists. Classic. Anyway, on that note of white supremacy, let's get back to Thomas Brown. After the war, he was able to get back to East Florida in a prisoner exchange, but unfortunately, he wasn't able to stay there because part of the treaty ending the war meant that Spain got Florida. Whoopsies. So Thomas spent the next few years bouncing around islands in the British Caribbean. And this is kind of funny because at one point, he was on this island in the Bahamas, and he got really pissed off there because he and the other British settlers couldn't get representation in their government. It's like, buddy, what are you trying to say? No taxation without representation? He eventually ends up on St. Vincent. And because, you know, he was loyal, because he's a Tory, la 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 la, the British gave him a lot of money, a lot of land, and 600 enslaved people. One thing I want to point out is that a lot of articles about Thomas Brown, they sometimes just skip over the part where it says he had enslaved 600 people. They're like, oh, he just got to live his dream of being a planter. Okay, but let's remember his true, accurate legacy, okay? But let's get back to the subject of tar and feathering. What do you think we can learn from this episode? What I've learned is that if you're going to tar and feather someone, you got to make sure you know who you're dealing with. If you tar and feather that person, are they going to seek revenge? Also, how much revenge? And that might help you make a choice. Because if Thomas Brown hadn't been tar and feathered, maybe he wouldn't have fought so hard. Anyway, if you are going to tar and feather someone, I would say make a pros and cons list and just sort of really assess the situation before you do it. Okay, bye. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. This episode was hosted and written by me, Gabby Watts. The theme song is by me and Jesse Neiswanger. Our senior producer is Amelia Brock, and our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, and Brandon Barr. You can follow along with the show on Instagram at American Filth Pod. And if you like this episode, or if you didn't like this episode, please leave a review, leave a comment. If it's mean, make it very funny. Okay, I do read them, and I do enjoy them. All right, bye. Talk at you next time. School of Humans.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you.
24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.